But that other side there is how we return to God through the sacraments. On the very far back corner of that window over there, the vertical up and down window, is a symbol of a tree. And in the tree is the key rose. He wrote the Greek letters for Jesus Christ, which is his name. And the psalm again, looks like I'm making things up here. As the deer panteth after the running water, so my soul longs for you, O Lord. So right next to that tree is a deer in Psalm 41. And the deer is panting after the running water, and it's symbolized by the water running alongside the tree, that greenish blue color, coming all the way into the baby blue color under the window there. All right, Jesus said, I am the vine and you are the branches. Unless the vine abides in me, it will die. The branch abides in the vine, it will die. So we come, we receive our life from the vine, through Jesus, out through the branch. So in the branches, and that's that long, brownish, serpentine-looking thing that comes twisting along through the window. And that's supposed to be the extension of the vine through the branches. In the branches have been set symbols of the sacraments. The first one, the overturned turned way back in the right-hand side, has an overturned shell with the waters of baptism coming out of it. The next one is the Holy Spirit signifying confirmation. The next one is the chalice, which lines up with the second. There's two of them there for the Eucharist. You've got the chalice, the wheat and the grapes for the Eucharist. The next one is the keys of Peter, the sacrament of penance. Whatever you unlock will be unlocked. Whatever you lock will be locked. Sacrament of penance. The next one there is the priesthood, which has the book lying down. You can just see the edges of the pages of the book, white, horizontal line. Above that is a stole. The priest wears a stole, which is a symbol of authority, and he is a priest. Right, so that's the priesthood. The next one, I think, nicest piece of stained glass before church is the symbol of the Eucharist. Symbol of marriage. The two rings with the cross to it, and the two flames signifying the life of Christ. And the final one, way over here on the left side, is the worst one of all. Couldn't figure out a symbol for the oil of the faith. Couldn't figure out a symbol. All the smart guys that I had, I can see some around there, Johnson, Dorfield, all the smart guys. Nobody can come up with a symbol for the oil of the faith. So we just put a thing there supposed to contain the oil, and we got on a OI, which is oleum in thermoil. In Latin words, oleum in thermoil. Someday we rebuild the church, find a better symbol. I live with that one right now. All right, so getting back to things, basic theology of it. We have the two big columns there representing the two big strong truths of our church, Trinity and Incarnation. God comes to us across the altar out here. We come back to Him by praise and through our sacramental life. And it's continued, if you will, down this column there, down that aisle there, the windows, which you don't get to see very much, by the two doors, have the symbols of the Trinity in them, or the three leaf clover, and various things in the symbol of the door comes from the Trinity, and down this way is a symbol of the Incarnation. Symbols of Christ and the grapes and the wine. We try to continue the symbols all the way around.
Good. Go ahead. He's on the run out of tape. So I turn that door, we get another half hour.
No, I can't stand that. Anyway, where do we go from here? Let's go to the basic church. We have this plain church room without any decor, any decorations in it. All you need for a church is a place, a room, with an altar. That's all we need. All you need is an altar. You don't need anything else. You've got a pulpit to lean on, and you've got other things to lean on and stuff like that. You don't really need it. Basically, it's just a room and an altar. And you really don't need a room. All you need is an altar for sacrifice. You have the altar.
in simplicity. The height of felicity lies in simplicity. That's the most striking monument in the United States. Think striking, telling monument in the United States. Now, we've got some nice monuments. We've got all those guys with the foreheads out there in Montana. You've got a beautiful Guttenbergian statue of Lincoln in the memorial in Washington. But what's the most striking monument? The Washington Monument.
Right.
Great. Clean, one time saved. Very simple. Very clean. Nothing around it. No all out in front of it. But just that clean mind. The height of felicity lies in simplicity. Father Leonard P., 1942. He wrote a book. You never guess what the name of the book. On facing my aunt's tapioca. Not sure. But he ends up with the height of felicity lies in my and I got it. Anyway, it's very simple to here. Now we have one fine piece up there. The only piece in this building, excuse me, that is important. That's Gideon Hill. And it was made out of linden wood. Linden wood is very good carving, mostly good carving, wood carving. The world made out of linden wood. Why? Because it has a good tight texture, it's reasonably easy to carve, it hardens, and it holds its shape without splitting like oak and other things like that. There's one more piece in here that's important. Where do you think it is? One more piece in here. The other piece. A totally different crucifix. I got that from Monsignor Peters, just to go to the guy who gave up his sneakers. But that is very different. That is from Obronica. In a totally different spirit of crucifixion. Look at that very closely sometimes. That's Germanic. Very strong, sometimes Gothic type of music carving. But this one here is Italian. And really quick, simple. And I've never quite figured out what the expression on that face is. You see here, you tell me whether it's kindness, love, gentility, peace. It's very peaceful. And they, that's from 9 feet tall, tied and hanging on one bolt. In New York, right, George? You can move that thing. And in the storm, it moves. It's a bolt. That can move the truck up the back. There's one bolt, 3/4 inch metal bolt that goes back into that ammonia for the metal bolt to be removed. And it sticks right in there, and it's all pulls it up. That's why every time I hear anything, I look. I don't want to be that thing. Get out of the way.
Oh, well, that bowl will take a couple thousand.
Yeah. Come on. Anyway, that can't really cost that. That's probably the most expensive piece in the building. It cost about $6,000. That, the only thing that cost more than that was the bell. About $6,200.
How about the pipe organ?
The pipe organ, yeah, well, yeah. But that's basic. Pipe organ cost $43,000. But you know what an electronic organ would cost? Over $40,000. An electronic organ. This one was used to have a horn. But that's a genuine type wind organ. And the whole thing, and that console over there with the pipes running around. Do you know how many pipes there are in that organ? 4,870. It would be interesting if you could ever make it. You old jukers, I think you could do it. But the step ladder we can get in there, ladder you can get up through the factory and only seal the pipes in that order. 4,275.
What are the pipes?
Steel, most of them.
Black iron?
No, they're thin metal. I don't look down metal. Okay.
Well, all right.
Some of them
will rust.
Some of the pipes are small as a pencil. That big. And you can take them out, so the wind chamber comes through here, they drill a hole, they drop that pipe in there, and it's got a hole in the bottom of it, and it's got the mouth, they call the mouth of the pipe, that open thing there. And you can go through that, and go, but every note on the organ is a multiplication. There's two manners. Got 88 kingdoms. There's 21 ranks. 21 different tones. You have a trumpet, an oboe, a violin, all the different things you can have there. There's 21 of those. Multiply that on 88 plus 88 times the different voices within the oboe field and that part. So that's only 4,875. It really is interesting. You have to make sure I was a pipe. You come out and walk through and come back in. Anyway, Oregon. The stations have come on the stages. When we built the church, I have this shirt down at the cathedral. I did. 29 years. This church got to be 35 years old. It's a ton of them. And it's just getting one in because I put new things on the cathedral. That has nothing to do with the church. Stations of the cross. Right. Everybody knows the stations of the cross. And there are two ways of phrasing it. The stations of the cross are places of meditation. If you use 14 stations, there's 14 stops. The station means a stop. The place where you stop and you pray. So there are 14 stations or stops on the way from Jerusalem into the tomb. Alright, we pondered and pondered on stations that would be fitting in this church building. And I did a lot of traveling around back in those days. I went to New York. I went to San Francisco. I went to Phoenix. I went to Albuquerque. A lot of places. Trying to find the right set of stations. And I ran into a person out there in San Francisco just about to. And Joseph told me the price. She was a lady sculptor. I knew she was a lady. She had on a jumpsuit and blue jewelry. And she shook hands on her. My God, she broke my hand. And it turned out to be a lady. She was almost flipping me or something like that. And she was okay. Beautiful work. She did work in wood, in stone, and in fiberglass. And she once saw me set stations, which were really fun. $2,000 a piece. I paid 14 times 2 equals $28,000. The entire sanctuary in New York, the whole thing didn't cost $28,000. So my Scotch blood started running, and I come back on the airplane. I said, what the heck? Why don't we make our own stations? So that's how that set of that way of the cross. We call it the way of the cross rather than the station of the cross. It's one unified way from there to there to there to there with the theater with the back. So the way of the cross is there and we built it. Roy Grove, Bob Johnson, Red Hines, Paul Stevie in heaven, Wally Kowalas, not in heaven. Who else? Deacon, the old dog, he had come to beat on the wood all the time. But anyway, we got the basic design and put them together, and the whole thing up there, that whole works, cost about $480. The whole thing, all the wood. You know what cost the most? See those little light boxes down below there? I had to go buy bronze humor. And I ordered the bronze humor. The bronze humor cost $187. Just for the humor. It cost almost as much as the whole thing. And I stopped for the curtain again. But anyway, how do they relate to the building? The shape of this building is basically an uneven arch. If you go from that point to this point to that point, you've got an uneven arch. It's like this and like that. It's a long and a short. With a broken arch, uneven arch. Take a look at that wall right there, back at the station. That wall is the same shape short on the top. Now look down at the stations. The top of that wave to the right, that first station, is supposed to represent the wall of Jerusalem. And it is the same as the shape of the wall behind it, only reversed. It's got a short leg on the right, I'm looking at the top of it now, and a long leg on the left. So what we've tried to use through that whole building of stations is what we call a leitmotif. A leitmotif in German means a little pattern through the work. Now, in music, we use it frequently. Beethoven's ta-ta-ta-ta, ta-ta-ta-ta. That's the Beethoven just something, huh? All right. He used that ta-ta-ta-ta through the whole thing. He just repeated it, embroidered it, changed the key, and so, but he kept the same theme through the whole thing. Actually, we tried to keep through here the same theme of action that the building had. So from the top of that wall, jump over to the top of the Blessed Mother, the 1-2-3-4 station. It has the same broken arch pattern. All the way through, you can see the broken arch pattern all the way down to the end. All right, station section is made out of poplar wood. Now, poplar wood, you might sniff at because poplar is a cousin of cottonwood. The cottonwood tree is the nastiest tree in the world. But nice trees. Red hates them. I like them. Red hates them because the cotton gets into the filters and off of the air conditioning. But, that's all right. But a cottonwood tree will grow like crazy, and so also does poplar. Now, poplar wood grows mostly down in Tennessee, Kentucky and down here, and it grows like mad. You can plant a cottonwood or a poplar tree, it'll be that big in about 15 years. Big enough to cut good chunks of wood out of it. Now, we bought that wood at North End Lumber, and you can buy that stuff as much as 12, even 13, 14 inches by an inch and a half, maybe, by planks of it. And it's rather expensive. And incidentally, practically all of your furniture at home is built out of poplar wood. Now you may have oak, mahogany, walnut finish on the outside. You took that over and take a look at it. The underneath part is practically all poplar wood. Your cabinets, your everything. Poplar wood is the furniture wood of our country. All right, easy to carve. I say that a few other guys haven't carved it. I've said carve. It's really easy to carve. And it holds a good tight line with a carving tool. And ends up with a rather nice soft finish. Now, you know the stations. You know the area of them. The only other thing I would point out is the only thing metallic up there are the three nails. Now, those are copper. Those are copper nails. And the crown of thorns around the crucifix. Now, the crucifix, the cross itself is not popular with that. The dirtiest, oldest pieces of oak that we could find on them, and then down there, we went through a whole lumberyard trying to find old, strong, rough pieces of wood. And there they are. That's behind the crucifix. And the crucifix figure, again, very simple. Simple, clean, straight design of the figure of Christ. Around there, as it is, the crown of thorns. Well, that kind of stumped us for a while. And so I found a guy whose name is Preston Jackson. Preston Jackson is a black man, and he's lives in town. He lives up places. And he is the head of the sculpture department at Western Illinois University. He is also a real good musician. Goes around town, he's a guitar player. And an excellent musician, but also a fine sculptor. So I said to Freddy, I called him over there one day, I said, Preston, can you make me a metal crown of thorns? And he said, what's a crown of thorns? And he's a Muslim. He's a Muslim. He's not a Muslim. He's a Christian. At first, I explained to him that whole thing about that. I said, don't worry about that. And so he said, fine. He said, you design it to scale, and I'll make it. So I wasn't about to try to convert Preston Jackson to Muslim. So I made a design, in case I can't remember, I think it was an inch to a foot. And I said to him, what do you need for materials? I'll let you know. So he made those in about 3 pieces of wood. He made those things in his forge. He was a forge. And you never guess where he got the metal.
bumpers from automobiles. So he took them and he mounted them or softened them in his cord, twisted them, and put those thorns on them, which is just the part of iron, and stuck them together and stained them with the heat and with some kind of metallic thing. And that's how it came out.
So
that's interesting. And that's been back. I'm still doing something. I don't think I've asked you. Anyway, you getting tired? I'm getting tired. Friends, I bet you'd like to. There's too many of you to come up here. The last time I had to come up on the wall, but you call out and you see it and nothing. So, but the altar is one piece of stone.
Piece of stone.